All right. Welcome back. Michael Tesarian is back on for this next hour, and I've asked him to come on because he sent me an email a couple of weeks ago about the 2012 issue. We've been talking about that for quite some time on the program, and as I have mentioned repeatedly, there are many books already out there with 2012 on the cover. You wait, folks. You think you've seen anything remotely frightening, and I use the word advisedly, like Y2K? Well, 2012, as it rolls around, if we're still around to see it, all of us, is going to make Y2K look like nothing, zero. They're beating the drums of paranoia, fear, doomsday, end of the world, the beginning of something or the end of something. No one knows for sure, but it's open to so much interpretation now that it's given so many people with keyboards and hard drives an opportunity to write a book and tell us what's really going to happen. Well, I thought Michael Tesarian has certainly earned our respect for his remarkable research, and I wanted to get him back on to hear what he has to say about this whole disinformation on 2012. Welcome back, Michael.
Oh, welcome. Thank you very much, Jeff. Nice to be back.
Sure. All right. 2012. Did the Mayans simply run out of stone when they were crafting that calendar, or did it end there deliberately? What's your take on all this?
Well, you know, obviously, we have to understand, first of all, that the Mayans had many calendars. They had not just two or three. The most famous one is the one you're speaking about, is the Zolkin.
I understand that, and people don't talk about that. They commonly think that the Mayan calendar was the Mayan calendar, and that's it.
Yeah. No, they had the Hayab. They had the Zolkin, which is the very famous one that you're mentioning. And there was a ton of other ones, very, very important calendars. They had many calendars which were just part of their whole astronomical gnosis.
A calendar of the month.
Yeah, and they used them for different reasons. We have one calendar, but then, of course, we know that the farmers, you know, even up till modern days, have their own almanac.
Sure.
Down through the medieval ages, there was a different almanac than the church. The clerics would have their particular feast day type calendar. So even we have used several different types of calendar. The thing that makes the Mayan thing so extraordinary, of course, is that the prophecy, the whole idea that time, perhaps, or history, I prefer history, not time, because it is pretty much a disinformationalistic thing when people are talking about time or reality or nature,
right,
or matter coming to an end. This is what puts, of course, a lot of fear into people, and quite rightly, because it's a misinterpretation. Oh, just because something that the human animal has concocted,
mm-hmm,
something vile, perfidious, unjust, sadistic, and cruel that the human mind has come up with, i.e.
mm-hmm,
history,
mm-hmm,
i.e. cities and a certain way of life, just because that might be coming to an end in no way implies that nature itself is in any danger.
Right. Good point.
So this is one of the most crucial things to, you know, convey.
Well, that's our egocentric species perspective.
That's it. And basically, that is it. You see, sure, there's changes. Haven't we just witnessed a tsunami that came and destroyed the lives of God knows how many millions of people while we sat back in our comfortable armchairs?
Mm-hmm.
Haven't we seen Mexico City been devastated? You know, I mean, these things happen all over the planet.
Right.
So we cannot say that there is no such thing as phenomena that takes place that is considered utter tragedy or travesty. My God, it's happening right now.
Well, my feeling, and it's no secret about it, I've been open about it for years, is that I believe that the human, or what would pass for a human species, and an ordered societal evolution of such, has occurred over and over again over the millennia that this planet, this 4 billion year history, has existed. I think been around before.
And you have just then put into a nutshell exactly what the main Maya mythos is really about, because they had one of the most elaborate creation myths that anyone could ever hope to read. It was a Native American Indian one,
mm-hmm,
and it spoke exactly what you're talking about. It's not the only one in the world that did, but it was one of the most fantastic to read.
Mm-hmm.
Just open any, you know, if your viewers, your listeners need to just go and look on the internet under Mayan creation myths, or open a coffee book table on it, you will see that it's fascinating. They talk about the four or the five great ages, and they say that an age opens, reaches its peak,
mm-hmm,
comes to its close, and then, you know, there's a cleansing, and then there's a moving on to another frequency, another dimension, which has, and in each age, there is the good and bad. It's not that there's some sort of age of enlightenment in which at all times in that age, you know, a good reigns or peace reigns. In every age, there is the up and the down. Mm-hmm. It goes, same goes for our age. So you're right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How well do we really understand the Mayan culture, in your opinion?
Well, not very well, because, you see, we have the misfortune of having guys reach there before us, which is the Zamoragas and the conquistadors and these bishops. Bishop Zamoraga, as soon as he arrives on the shores of, Palenque and in Mexico, these areas, starts immediately burning and purging the books.
Just like General Sherman's march. But there have been these kind of butchers and mass murderers and genocidal maniacs throughout history.
All the way, all the time. And they're sent. They are only henchmen. They're only doing the job of the forces that you and I have talked about and your guests speak about, the hidden elite, who have been reigning on this planet from the first centuries A.D. and from a lot before that. They send out these lieutenants for certain reasons. Like we spoke last time on the Irish origins of civilization,
right.
It was known that the merchants and people of their own accord were now going to be traveling out to the east, to the west.
Mm-hmm.
So the church, which had absolutely made it forbidden that anybody go even as far as Britain, now realized that merchants are just going to do it on their own. So they better get in there with their own gang and fund it themselves and hopefully even get out beforehand. Now, of course, this is not what you're going to read in history books. People are going to believe in the whole lie of Columbus and the kings and queens were just wondering that, heaven exists over the Atlantic Ocean, so let's get out there. That was all the gloss over in those days to keep people interested. What the real job was is that they knew that independent people were already going to be doing it. So they knew to get their own guys out there to butcher, molest, burn, and just go buck mad. Their orders were basically get over there and ransack everything and burn it, because we cannot have independent people going there and reading these people's books. It's not that Ferdinand and Isabella and Columbus and all of these Spanish and Portuguese and Venetians didn't know what was over there. They already knew that they were what was over there. We have images of elephants in South America where elephants are never meant to have existed. We have tobacco turning up in the coffins of the pharaohs, in which every scholar in the world tells you that tobacco has never grown in Europe. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you don't have to bring Michael Cremo on or Graham Hancock,
sure,
and we'll hear the whole story of this big lie.
Well, the point that you're making, and very well, is that the seas were, of course, navigable, incredible trade routes, which had existed for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
Our history, that we are taught, is a pale reflection of reality.
It's really a tissue of lies by the elite. And, you know, there's even evidence that the seas may have even been connected at one point. I'll go into that and my other work, but the whole idea that there's ages that come to their peak and fall was picked up by Plato, Aristotle, and specifically by a character called Vico. I go into this in the DVD that's coming out on 2012. And I think if we have to add anything, the reason why maybe my message brings this back is because my findings, working very much in the tradition of Wilhelm Reich, is the idea that, look, these historians and these sociologists are definitely clear on this point, that societies, are born, they come to their peak, and then they fade out in some type of cataclysmic situation.
Right.
The Bible has its revelations, but, even in a purely sociological way, this has been acknowledged. Now, my work, as I said, very much in the tradition of Wilhelm Reich, starts to ask another kind of question, and I'm very sad to say that this question has not been asked by all of these 2012 pundits now who are running around talking about the end of the world at 2012. And to me, it's the most essential question, which is why I'm glad that you gave me the opportunity to talk about it. It is known that all physical matter, everything that exists outside, everything that manifests, certainly in a social sphere, is articulated to consciousness. Meaning that what happens, whatever the temperature, the climate, the temperament of the human psyche collectively manifests a certain reality outside. Bruce Lipton, has gone into this, and many of people in his academic field are now looking into this.
Right.
Therefore, I ask a question. If something is going to happen at 2012 that absolutely changes the kind of way that we have been living, the kind of history that we've been created, that the idioms that our forefathers, our mothers and fathers, our grandparents have all taken for granted, if all of these things are going to pass away, then it's not just some movement on the celestial clock. It's not just some shadow on the time dial that, it's objective phenomena, we can't do anything about it, oh my goodness, which sends us rushing into the churches and rushing in to, ask George Bush to protect us all and all of this. No, it's all articulated inside consciousness, meaning that consciousness affects matter to a greater dimension than matter affects consciousness. We know there's a reciprocal connection between the two, and I have found that the answer is yes. It is. That is what the ancient Maya were saying. That's what the ancient Druids were saying. Mm-hmm. And that's what all true teachers, philosophers, and activists must understand today. That if there is changes in history, it is predicated upon certain intellectual, mental, emotional, psychic climate that's happening within people.
This is
the message that I bring.
Summed right up. Okay, we'll pause and be right back with Michael Tesarian in just a couple minutes. Don't go away. Okay, and we're back. You've got a couple notes here, Michael, that you were kind enough to send me. Pluto alignment with galactic center 2006-2007.
Right.
Now, we've got another planet, a tenth planet, which is apparently, was it bigger than Pluto? It's pretty sizable.
Yeah.
It's hanging around out there, so that... That has to... I wonder how the astrologers are going to figure that in and factor it, and I know the Planet X people are having fun with that, but I don't buy it. But
me neither. I'm very skeptical about that whole thing. It's one of the biggest areas of disinformation, and I cover it a lot in the forthcoming Origins and Oracles DVDs.
Right, I agree completely.
Yeah, there was a tenth planet up there, but it's long since gone, and it's not connected to the planet that they're talking about. This is another type of, thing that they want us to focus our energies outside of ourselves and outside of the planet and look at this and look at that. And all of these things are very interesting as studies. The face on Mars betrays to us that there definitely was extraterrestrial life present in our particular solar system that fashioned buildings on Mars and then came to Earth and did the same thing.
There's so many odd things on Mars, it's
sure.
Amazing. And they're all being filtered out. We're getting very few of them. The few glimpses
yes.
we do get are amazing. And just imagine what they are sitting on.
It's unbelievable what they're sitting on. You know, my book Atlantis goes into exactly what they're sitting on, and I've had dialogues about Mars with Richard Hoagland, and there's no doubt about it that these are important areas of study, but also these important areas of study can be created, and a new sort of the light can be moved. You know, if you change the light on something, the perspective changes, and therefore they can also be used to breed disinformation. For instance, the word Nibiru, which has been used by people to represent this planet, did not refer to a planet. I don't know where this ever came from. The word Nibiru simply means from out there in space. It does not refer to a physical planet or physical body. So, you know, again, that's an element of disinformation there. It just simply is Sumerian for something that came from up there, period. That's all it meant.
Think of all the time and energy that you just mentioned that has been spent focusing, worrying, fantasizing, predicting, projecting about Planet X. And people who claim that it's out there and we're supposed to believe that all the world's amateur astronomers, and there's some damn good ones with excellent equipment,
absolutely.
Can't see anything?
No, exactly.
Come on.
Total. And then, to make it worse, the reciprocal part of that is that which is bloody obvious, excuse my Irish, in the world, nobody's looking at. Why are the telescopes not trained on that which is so severe, you know, within the political milieu or the other kind of science, like genetic science that's going on?
Yeah.
But getting back to the Maya, what you were talking about is the essence of why we're still talking about the Maya, because it was like we talked about in the Irish Origins thing, why on Earth, or actually when we talked about Atlantis, why on Earth 11,000 years later might we be talking about Atlantis? Well, the same thing goes right now. Why on Earth would we be talking about something that happened in the Maya books you know,
right.
X number of years ago. The reason is because we are living in a particular age that they refer to as the age of revealing. They literally use that term. Hmm. They said that from 1999, which is, let me be specific, it's December 21st, 1999, we would be in what was called a 13-year countdown to the end date, or the zero hour of 2012. And the Maya specifically mentioned that. Now, the reason why it's important to us today is because many of the things that they implied are actually happening. They're literally taking place in front of our eyes to those who have pattern recognition and symbolic literacy. Now,
right.
I know what you're interested in, and rightly so. You're interested in the political sphere, these types of saber-rattling, this kind of conquest that's going on, the rise of the new imperialism, perhaps, the rise of the new fundamentalist religion paradigms, perhaps. Absolutely, you should be, because having binoculars onto these types of events, then you pull back from the canvas and realize it has been said before. These are symptoms of the coming of the end of the age of Pisces.
Mm-hmm.
The Maya talked about the age of revealing. Psychologically translated, that represents the coming down of the mask. What is the mask? It's the mask that we all wear, that all people wear, and it's necessary to have the persona. It's necessary to have the mask so that we can conceal our motives from other people. There's nothing inherently negative with that.
Right.
But the mask has a separate function as well. The mask is how the devilish, evil people of the world disguise who they are. So the mask has two functions. And when the Maya are talking about the mask coming down, we, as protagonists in this great game of Armageddon, need to be very aware what that will mean. Because if we're not aware, we're going to be stimulated to false action, out of fear, out of paranoia.
Hmm.
What my message is to people is that when you start seeing the mask slipping, as it already has begun to slip, on physical people that you know,
mm-hmm.
and even on the social and political stage, you better know what's happening so that you don't react inadvisably. You have to be okay with those changes, because it's a kind of light that is coming in, the light that Jordan Maxwell talks about, this specific kind of light that reveals the dirt that is in people and that is in society. Now, the thing that we have to specifically understand that goes along with that is this. If it's true that there's a Pluto alignment or photonic energy, or we're counting down to the Maya zero hour, all of this stuff, it doesn't really concern me what type of terminology is used, but if there is some ending cycle that is coming, then it's not only going to be the children of light and the children of truth and the children of justice who are going to feel it and want it. The other side, that means those people who've been hiding behind the mask and who have a hell of a lot to lose should the mask start slipping,
right.
They are going to want to take counter actions to make sure that, you know, the game stays the way it is and the ambiance remains as toxic as they always want it to be.
Right.
And that is why this message is important, because rather than some airy-fairy New Age malarkey, this is very much concerned with what are the other side, knowing that the roach cleaner is on its way, that nature goes through its cleansing cycle, what are we likely to see reactively from those people? I believe we are seeing those symptoms, and it's going to continue right down to 2012.
And one of them may be the onslaught, the nonstop destruction of the environment, as if there's no tomorrow.
Yeah. Maybe all of that is included, but yeah. Also comes the tyranny over the human mind, which will increase as the time goes by.
Ruthless.
Yeah.
Absolutely ruthless. Back in a minute. Don't go away. Back with Michael Tesorian. You know, Michael, it's going to be very difficult for a lot of people to withstand the temptation to be suckered in by this 2012 mania, which is growing in the background and going to get louder.
Right.
Make-a-buck con men and con women out there, hustlers, the disinformation professionals, the agents provocateurs. The whole idea, of course, now is to increase the noise level so much that people can't focus, don't want to focus. They want to withdraw and just do their little thing in life and have fun. That's how they're suppressing more and more people.
Yeah.
It's a game. And so how would you counsel people as we slide toward this 2012 issue? And God knows if we may not make it at the rate things are going. But how do people keep this at arm's distance? It's going to be very pervasive.
Well, it's going to be very hard because, you see, you have, you know, the media who co-opts a lot of this. The whole symbolism that's represented by Pluto, or let me correct that, the dark or negative symbolism that's associated with the planet Pluto, has already been co-opted in the media with these sci-fi channel, shows that are based on, you know, like forensics, and also on corpses and death and the intense violence. People, of course, were reacting about the violent commercials that were shown on a recent ball game. It's always going to be in your face as people in power understand what it is that is missing from the lives of the ordinary people and then provide that stuff in surrogate ways. So obviously people need to become very symbolically literate. They have to start realizing the symbolic alphabet that is used against them, this language of symbols by which we're both being told what is coming down the tubes and also by which we're being infected. Just like you are infected by a virus, certain symbolism, as you know, Jeff, on television and on the media and in the billboards, also suggesting to us certain things. So people need to become symbol literate to be aware of what is going on and just try to offset the worst of it by getting back into their center, by realizing, getting back to their spiritual source if they have one, and also to realize that change is healthy. I think that one of the most important things that a conservative culture or civilization like we're living in really need to also re-understand is that change is good. Go with it. Learn to love it. Flow with it, because there is major change coming, and that change is going to be felt on all of the levels of being, meaning that it will be. So one of the things that goes along with what you just said is I am expecting a lot of people to be hitting us back with, I'm not seeing any kinds of changes going on, or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, then don't put your focus only on the material, on the physical, because Pluto's action or the countdown to the 2012 is going to be very much influences that are felt on different levels by different people. You and I know full well that we're already seeing massive changes in the New World Order Brotherhood, and that's political. But see, some people are just stone dead. They cannot see those changes, or they are programmed to believe that those are just natural, autonomous changes that take place in the political sphere. But I'm even adding to that. I'm saying look out for those changes that are happening in your most domestic circle. If you're collectively blind and you can't see what's happening outside, you're certainly going to see it in the changing of your relationships with the people that you know, in the relationships that you know you have in family with your children, and also at work. You're going to see it. You're going to be experiencing all of this. So you have to know why it's happening, so you're not reacting in a fear reaction. And as Jordan Maxwell and others have said so many times,
right. You
end fear by knowledge. When you know what is happening,
right,
and you've read the manual, well, then
right. There's
no the reason for fear. Now it becomes actually quite an experience for you, a new interesting experience in which you're fully empowered.
Precisely. It's always good to hear you acknowledge the work of Jordan Maxwell. Many wouldn't bother. They would just claim it as their own. You don't do that. You're a scholar and a gentleman. But I've seen Jordan's work just stolen for so many years now by
sure. People.
It's really disgusting.
Well, it is disgusting, you know, and there wouldn't be a Michael Tassarin without a Jordan Maxwell, so that's basically
right. The
way it is. As Isaac Newton said when they asked him about his discoveries, he said, because I stand on the shoulders of giants.
There you go.
I am exactly indebted to Jordan because he is a giant in this field and
needs
to be acknowledged in this country.
He's the man.
For what he is. He's spurned so many people. So many people have spurned him who have been made by him, so it's
right. Just
outrageous.
Another one is, while we're mentioning, just very briefly, Dr. John Coleman, who wrote the book The Committee of 300, Conspirators' Hierarchy.
Yeah.
John Coleman literally has made dozens of careers.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. But those are two men that I don't want any of you ever to forget. Jordan Maxwell and Dr. John Coleman.
And in fact, I have a blog, and we were just talking about Dr. John Coleman on my blog. I was recommending his books, The Conspirators' Hierarchy, which you just mentioned, and also another one called Diplomacy by Deception.
Diplomacy by Deception
will teach the listeners of this program how the Tavistock Institute of England, which is connected to the International the Institute of International Affairs, how those organizations control the Chicago, the veteran hospitals and Chicago University, and control the Stanford Research Institute, the Hoover right. Institute, and how they've permeated into the pop culture of America, and how their agents are working in this country. That book, which is a must for people, Diplomacy by Deception, will explain how the entities that run from London actually control their lieutenants in America. Because we point this out, and a lot of people go, where's the proof? We don't believe it. Oh, show us some evidence. Well, okay, I got a name for you. Yeah. Dr. John Coleman. Yeah, all right?
All you folks have to do is read. Most people don't want to. They don't want to read. They don't want to be. Their mind is made up. They don't want the facts.
So, well, there was some Roman scholar that said those who do not read or do not like to read are the equivalent of those who cannot read.
I agree.
Right?
Except you don't use it, might as well not be able to.
The difference is that the one who cannot read has an excuse. You know,
true.
The other person does not. No,
true.
They're wondering what's happening with Paris Hilton's underwear.
Oh, please.
You know? This is
I know.
And then we're wondering why sovereignty is slipping out of the door, the economy has gone to pieces, China and India are taking your jobs, and the whole damn place is falling down into an abyss.
Well, it's already over.
That's what we've said on the latest blog. You know, I had to say it on the blog that I got, that, listen, America, you know, the reason why, well, first of all, the people who are waging war in the Middle East are not American. America is not waging war in the Middle East. It is the destroyers of America who are waging war in the Middle
East. Quite right.
It's like a dragon that has already brought America to its knees can now bother itself with the small potato countries and the little fleas that it had to put on hold while the mighty experiment of America still was in their targets. Now that this country is on its knees and is in the bag, they look around to the Kyrgyzstan, and let's look over here to Afghanistan, and let's look over here to Iraq, and swat them back into line, because we've had problems with them in the past. But we'll tell Serbia where you know how to get into line, and we'll annihilate their country so that people can go and ski on their slopes, and we can open resorts there, and we can butcher and molest that country, as we've done for years. And we deal with all of these small potato countries, because now the big giant that once you know was our adversary, our rival, is like Gulliver tied up on the beach.
All the little puppies
have Gulliver, which is America, completely strapped down.
It's a very effective image, a very vivid image. You're right. All right. Back in just a couple minutes, freak behavior of animals worldwide, not to mention the decimation of animal species, too many to count. The deforestation of the lands, the desertification, that means the turning into verdant lands, into desert, continue at staggering paces, both of them. Deforestation, desertification. That's a recipe, folks, for the end of life as we currently know it on the planet. All right, we'll be back with Michael Tesarian after this. Okay, right back with Michael Tesarian. What did you say on your weblog? You have pronounced it "it over." I've been saying that for a long time. People used to criticize me, but I did it economically. Let's just talk about economics: the flow of industry out of this country, the eradication of the middle class, the outsourcing of jobs, the insourcing of jobs, which people don't even understand is going on. They fly teachers over here, literally. 747s full of them from India, from the Philippines, ready to take jobs that Americans no longer can take or will take. So it is over. The process is irreversible. And I have suggested for a long time that the evil at the top of the heap, those dark forces that are running things here, will take all of us down with them rather than ever give up control voluntarily. I don't see it happening. They're too evil.
Well, all the permutations that you're talking about, this is part of the plan that was in hundreds of years of making to finally, like we talked earlier about the massive cycles that affect the whole Earth.
Sure.
There are also the same cycle applied on lower levels of the fractal. So the world controllers know how to use this beginning, middle, and end creation, sustainment, destruction methodology, even in the economies of the world. America was created, it moved to its peak, and it quickly has been falling. And what we're seeing now is the advent of America being turned into a third world country. The third world countries are becoming first world, as anybody with a brain can see. And America, that used to be the first world country, who actually made the cake that everybody thought they were going to have a piece of, has now been denied to even have its own cake and eat it. As you're saying, John Coleman, since we were speaking about him, he beautifully puts it. He says that it's like the ladders are being pulled up on the middle class. The great pyramid of power has been built. The capstone is ready to be put in its place. Everyone is living under the shadow of the pyramid, thinking they're in the sunlight. Mm-hmm. So now that the pyramid has been built, all the little ants and all the agents and lieutenants who helped build it are no longer needed. So now they're going to pull up the prosperity ladder on all those suckers who were moving the beast.
Boy, that's a correct analysis.
Well, they don't need you.
Yeah.
David Icke has said this. They don't need the lower rank and file. So suddenly jobs are being closed. You come to your, it's like that movie, The Brotherhood of the Bell. The poor sucker goes to his work and he finds another name on the door of the place he's been working for 20 years. Well, hey, this is because they don't need you.
This is not an evolution, folks. This is a diametrical plan to get rid of the backs upon which this country was built and sustained. And
first
the backs
all,
are being gone.
Then you got it. And first of all, this country was, I believe this country was never even given a breathing spell for the ordinary inhabitants of this country to even enjoy the prosperity that they had built with their own hands.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. The pace was nonstop.
My goodness, it's quite obvious. The Scots, Irish, and the European people that came to this country who made it what it is barely sat down to enjoy it before the floodgates opened and everybody else who didn't deserve it came in to shake the tree and have the fruits. So that's already a problem I have.
Right.
And the second one is now, well, the game's bloody over. It's very, very hard to turn back the clock. Now, one of the things that is important to realize about this is that they're going to, that's the stick. But now they're going to offer the carrot.
Mm-hmm.
When people finally, not people like ourselves who are already onto this, but when the average rank and file person who doesn't know anything about these movements of history starts really rebelling against the fact that the jobs are being outsourced, which I expect to start happening very soon, then they hand you the carrot saying, but okay, I'll tell you what. We won't outsource your job, but you will have to work for the same rate of pay as the guys we would be paying if we did outsource. How about that?
Yeah.
And you know what Mr. America's going to do? He's going to get down on his knees with his begging bowl in his hand and is going,
sure.
Sir, thank you for protecting me, for saving my family. And I can put the flag on my workstation, and I'm happy I'm free, and I will take a three-quarters cut for the job that I did before.
No, you're right.
200 years ago, you told these people, you kicked their ass so bad that they had to run back across the Atlantic Ocean and hide.
Mm-hmm.
And in 200 years, what has happened? Were these Rothschild agents and whoever else, and their people, the crown that they pay, and the European despots, have now brought this mighty country to its feet, to its knees.
Well, it's being eviscerated is what's happening. Its soul is being removed.
No, it's incomprehensible to me that this has been happening. But again, as I explained,
happening in broad daylight and with no stealth, no subtlety, no reservation whatsoever. Because when they tried, I tell you, this is what happened. They ran several dry runs. The first World Trade Center bombing, which didn't come off as such.
Mm-hmm.
The big one was the OKC bombing, though. When the American public didn't push back after Oklahoma City and swallowed the whole thing, hook, line, and sinker. They knew at that point that control, total control, had been achieved. That was it. The Patriot Act wasn't envisioned per se back then, but if you go back and look at the legislation that was passed after the Oklahoma City bombing, you'll see it. It's all there. It's the same thing. They just took it 10 steps further the next time.
And look at Waco.
Sure. Oh, well, Ruby Ridge, Waco. Here we saw Waco. Men, women, and children slaughtered, burned to death on national television. And no one did anything.
Children were bent double, and I don't mean bent double in forward. Their spines were broken. The poison was so convulsive that their muscles convulsed till they bent over backwards. This is what America allowed to happen to its children. And then I see this Clinton on Oprah Winfrey getting a standing ovation because of some garbage book that he wrote.
Please.
My fist nearly went through the television screen. I was so, I have to stop and think, hang on, Michael, you're just a visitor to these shores. Calm down. But I can't. I just cannot believe that this kind of thing, these kinds of creatures are getting standing
well,
ovations.
Well, they say that 40% of America stands firmly behind Bush, which is, if that doesn't scare any thinking American, nothing will.
I know it. Well, you know, this is where we're at. And that's why my whole message when I'm doing my talks on something like 2012 and the coming mm-hmm. countdown is always very positive. Because I'm saying, look, please explain to me what you're in fear of.
You want more of the same? You want everything to stay like this forever? Is that what you? This is your comfort zone? If this is your comfort zone, you know, I want no part of it.
Point made.
Yeah.
I'm going, a destructive leviathan that was thousands of years in the creation is finally coming to its teetering, is finally going to meet the justice field, is going to enter, and these parents are going to have their heads on the cosmic block. And you're in fear? I can't bloody wait. Because this toxic thing is stinking up the world. Its odor has risen to the very noses of the gods.
It's a terminal virus, a malignant tumor that has really established itself all around the world and is growing everywhere you look. And it's fueled by, of course, greed and stupidity. And the average American, the average human beings, lust for toys. I mean, they know. Remember the Chinese had their number one goal, their number one priority for the Chinese Communist government was to have a television in every home by the end of the year 2000.
Yeah.
And they did it. That is the most ruthless weapon ever unleashed on humankind. The most ruthless, without question,
mm-hmm.
television.
Jordan
it's the controller. And I'll tell you one other thing, Michael. I don't have to tell you, but I'm speaking rhetorically. When there is, and if there is, a cataclysm of sorts, they will protect television and make damn sure that people still have access somehow to TV, because that's the controller.
Well, that's the Orwellian antenna that they can't run without. You see, in Ireland and Belfast, they can put a gun to each person's head. That they do there, right? They have armies in the streets, and they have barricades around your door, and they have your gun to the head. America's too big for that. So they have another kind of gun, television.
Right. That's absolutely true.
Right? That television in your room, I mean, I'm not saying throw it out or anything like that, but I'm just saying be it known that it is used as a gun to your head. It's a shotgun in the corner that if you're not aware and savvy and you don't have your shields up, then know that all sorts of viruses are coming across of it. And that's why I have no fear at any particular kind of countdown. I think what happens is that nature or whatever divine intelligence we're talking about gives us two choices when any kind of calamity is on its way. It says, first, you, man, you deal with it by your own choice. We give you full, the light is green, and you go and you solve it yourself. But if the Republic is in total chaos, and a point comes where man is only making it worse, and he's like a spider caught in his own web, or mm-hmm. as I always say, he's running around rearranging furniture on the Titanic, which is what the political pigsty is designed to help you do.
Precisely.
Right? Then nature goes, okay, guys, see the red light? Stop what you're doing, because Mother Nature, who is the greatest cleanser in the world, is going to take over the job. You've made a mess of it, so now the natural forces, which are represented by the astrological jargon that I use, it's just the way I communicate, but do not think for a moment, your audience, that this is some side issue of some wacky astrology. Astrology is just a rhetoric, a form of jargon that expresses what other historians and what even scientists have already proven. So if people come on my website or come in and look at my Origins of Evil web stream, or for instance, they, you know, looking at the DVDs, don't fool yourself into thinking that just because the guy is using astrological terminology that we now need to, you know, not listen. This is merely my form of rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
It is a rhetoric, but the undergirding statement that it refers to is corroborated by the Noetic Institute and by Bruce Lipton's of the world and by many other scientists who are looking into the true nature of man and how the microcosm and the macrocosm are connected. It's a message that the ancient shamans used to teach, and now, thankfully, the scientists are catching up with this incredible symbiosis between what happens materially and what's happening within. It just so happens that we have behind the mask some of the most toxic, what I describe as psychic criminals, who have been inhabiting this space-time for many aeons. If we want to get into metaphysics about it, the metaphysicians talk about...
Well, they are psychic criminals. They're the psychic vampires.
Right.
The pathology is limitless, you're right.
Right, and the pathology is known to those who know. Jung talked about it, Freud talked about it, Wilhelm Reich definitely talked about it. Mm-hmm. And these people are preying on the world. And they have been preying, perhaps, if you go into what Jordan has been saying about different ages of the zodiac.
Right.
These people may have come full circle. You see, we're in the age of Pisces now. What people need to realize about the 2012 is... can be only expressed in astrological terminology. So again, forgive me for that, but
mm-hmm.
we are now in the close of what is known as the Age of Pisces.
How long did that last?
2,160 years is when it lasts, and it's got about another 100 or so to go. But we are then entering into the age of Aquarius, and everybody in the New Age movement then jumps forward in their mind and goes, oh, tell us all about the wonderful glowing age of Aquarius. Michael Tesorian says, no, tell us about the end of the age of Pisces that you happen to be in. Let's not worry about what's coming tomorrow. Let's find out where you happen to be now and what might be closing this particular age.
Well said, Michael. Thank you. Thanks very much for being here. I admire your passion and your intellect and your dedication to truth, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay, and people are welcome to come on to my new blog. Just go to taroscopes.com and you'll be routed through to the new blog. We want to hear your comments.
taroscopes.com.
One T, plural, and you'll be routed to the blog.
Thank you, Michael.
Oh, Jeff, it's a great pleasure, my brother. Thank you so much.
Indeed.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Good night. All right, time for a little break, and be right back with you.